Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. I'm here with Dr. Toni today, and we have a different kind of an episode. Today, we're going to answer your listener questions in this Ask Me Anything episode. So we've collected questions from our Facebook group, common questions we get from patients and friends, and we've put some nice quick and dirty answers here so you can get ideas on what to do if you're having insomnia or night sweats, what happens with those mood changes that can come in perimenopause, what if you're getting lots of migraines or heavy periods or bloating right now. That's happening with a lot of people, and heartburn because people are overindulging, eating and drinking late. Well, we've got some tips and tricks for you. So sit back and enjoy. So Toni, I think one major question we get, and I think we've experienced some challenges with this as well, is, you know, why can't I sleep? You know, I hit late 30s, early 40s, and I might have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, whether it's from mind racing or night sweats. You know, you're just really hot and you can't quite settle down. So how about we answer this one first?
Absolutely, because this is such a common question that I get from patients a lot, but also, again, when this has been kind of a topic of conversation on our Facebook group, and of course, people have contacted us directly about, especially that idea of night sweats as we are getting into perimenopause. So there's definitely a few different things to kind of look at when it comes to supporting sleep quality, but also especially that idea of the night sweats that can happen as our hormones are changing. And again, there's that idea of how night sweats come about when we have drops in estrogen that can happen more frequently as we're getting into perimenopause and into menopause itself. So definitely something to really kind of pay attention to is, are there specific triggers that make, you know, sleep worse, make hot flashes or night sweats worse? Are there days when it's better, days when it's worse? So really kind of paying attention to that. And I know that that's been a real key for even myself personally. I've really started to notice that with alcohol intake, and unfortunately, not just wine, but all alcohol, I was really noticing an increase in hot flashes and night sweats really interrupting my sleep at night. So that was just a number one real key for me.
Mm-hmm. I find, yeah, wine, alcohol, a big trigger. Even if it's only a glass or two, I know my body temperature is going to be warmer. And even like when we're drinking wine, you know, we typically drink wine maybe close to bedtime. We might be snacking a little bit more. So if I eat too close to bed, my body temperature definitely goes up and I'm warmer. And I'm a person who's sensitive to garlic. I love it, but I get like the garlic sweats if it's too much. My husband Pete loves garlic and it has some yang qualities to it. So that's like, you know, the heat energy, the go, go, go energy, as opposed to the yin energy, which is like cooling and calming. So certain foods like spicy food and garlic can increase that yang energy, and that can show up as more heat symptoms in people. So best to kind of limit those, get it at maybe an earlier dinner, not drink too late or too close to bedtime can make a huge difference.
That's so sad because I'm a big fan of garlic too, Lisa. So
I do. Does it bother you? Some people are fine with it, but I'm
so far. Yeah. So far I'm good. So hopefully that just continues.
I can get it earlier in the day and then I'm okay.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, especially in my case when it was, and again, a lot of my patients have this issue too, where with, you know, having a glass of wine or more, in the evening, interrupting sleep or, you know, especially because of night sweats, of course you can look at avoiding and eliminating that kind of trigger, but I even find a real key for that is really looking at, are you really supporting your liver function as much as you can? So what I found that can be really helpful is looking at increasing your antioxidant support for your liver, not just looking at supplements, but also looking at foods that support liver function, which are your cruciferous veggies, your brassica family veggies, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, kale. And definitely there's a certain amount of antioxidants that you could take in supplement form as well, either on their own or even combine. And there's certain multivitamins that have extra antioxidants. You know, I definitely think about things like N-acetylcysteine or NAC, green tea extract, alpha lipoic acid. There's a resveratrol. There's a lot to mention in terms of those antioxidants.
Yeah, those are some great suggestions. So we're talking about the liver because the liver, so of course it can metabolize your alcohol, but it also can metabolize the excess or bad types of hormones. So in perimenopause, your hormones can be all over the place, right? So your estrogen can fluctuate and you may even have an estrogen dominance too. So supporting proper liver detox, estrogen detox can help with a good quality sleep, just so you have the right balance of your hormones and then you're processing, you know, the alcohol that you're having. And some of you might be thinking, hey, wait a minute, when I have a glass of wine, I fall asleep so well. But yes, it can help you fall asleep alcohol, but it's going to impact your quality of sleep. And then you could wake in the middle of the night with those night sweats. So just pay attention to see if it does that to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, other things in terms of things to consider when it comes to supporting that proper hormone balance, not just again supporting liver to really properly break down your hormones, but there's other aspects to think about in terms of really supporting that proper hormone balance. Again, not just in terms of food wise, and definitely things I think of it are, you know, flax seeds can really provide some phytoestrogens to you know, support that proper balance, but also, you know, aid in that elimination of hormones. Other herbs for hormone balance can really be supportive as well. You know, things that I often consider for patients are things like black cohosh and maca can be really at the top of the list that way.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, one thing that's, you know, can really help too, if you have low progesterone, which can manifest in perimenopause, you can actually get hot flashes from that and your estrogen's relatively higher. So there can be kind of in an, you know, a pattern where you wouldn't necessarily think it's causing night sweats or hot flashes, but doing progesterone support with a herb like Vitex or using a bioidentical progesterone cream, that's made a big difference for me. That can help with those night sweats, and the progesterone support helps calm the mind too. And we'll get to, you know, mood changes and maybe a racing mind for the next question. But progesterones are relax hormones. So if you're low in that, you're going to have bad sleeps, you know, even in addition to the night sweats because your mind is racing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that progesterone support can be really helpful for a lot of women too. And definitely something else that, I mean, I found has been helpful for me is a compound or an amino acid called L-glycine. There has been suggestions that it does help to reduce some of that higher temperature. So in effect, kind of lowering your core temperature to help, as well as it does have a calming effect on the brain too. So it can support sleep. But, and then again, another
thing. Yeah, we call that a twofer. I love that word. Sorry, I had to throw it in. A twofer. Lowers your temperature, helps you with sleep.
Side benefits, not side effects. Love right. that too, right? And then that whole idea of lowering the temperature too, I think I'm a really big fan of really paying attention to the environment that you're sleeping in, you know, having a cool room, not being too hot when it comes to, you know, having, you know, lots of pajamas on. You may really want to look at really wearing light clothing or even no clothing at all when you're going to sleep.
Definitely. And, you know, keeping your body temperature cool. I found a great blanket, a weighted blanket called the Zonely. I have no affiliation with them. You guys might have your own favorite, but it weighs 15 pounds. So you just put it on your side of the bed. There's not like a big enough blanket for you and your partner, but it has glass beads in it and it's sewn like a quilt. So the glass beads don't move around while you're shifting with your sleep. There's like, they're very tiny and they're in small little sections in the blanket, but they're really helpful. Help to keep me cool. That extra weight can help calm your nervous system. So that's one of my new favorites, and definitely reducing the temperature before bed and wearing minimal to no clothing can be a game changer.
That's awesome. I think I might need to put that on my Christmas list for this year, something like this only.
It's great. Yeah. Now I almost feel like I need a heavier blanket. I'm used to it now. So maybe I'll go up to a 20-pound one.
Nice.
You got to be careful with the kiddos, right? If they want to crawl into bed, just make sure the blanket's not on them because it is too heavy for them. So just be conscious of that if you have really young ones. So
for sure. And especially, again, that idea of you know, calming yourself in order to really support sleep kind of even is connected to, you know, one of the other questions that we get a lot in terms of, you know, what can you do about extra irritability or mood changes that you're experiencing, especially, you know, that's so common for that to happen when we're stuck in something like a pandemic. I know for myself, I've definitely experienced periods where I've been feeling really overwhelmed with not only just day-to-day life stuff, but navigating, you know, changes around the pandemic and how we just can't do things the same way as we normally would. And sometimes, again, we can get really irritated and frustrated around that. So, you know, there's definitely a few simple things to kind of think about, as well as even more naturopathic supports to really kind of even things out. The first thing that I really have people start to think about is, you know, what is causing that kind of irritability or mood changes? When are you kind of being triggered to feel that way? When are you feeling more frustrated or overwhelmed? And, you know, a good really first step is to look at getting all of those feelings and emotions and stuff out of your head. So, you know, that can be talking to friends or family, talking to a counselor or psychologist. Journaling can be really fantastic to just kind of get all of that stuff out of your head so it's not just spinning around and staying inside and impacting you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about bullet journaling before. So this is just a good way to organize your thoughts. And you could have, you know, there's different pages that you number and you have an index. You could have a page for, you know, tracking how your mood is doing over your menstrual cycle. You could have a page for all the stuff you have to do for your kid or kids, all the stuff you have to do for work, your shopping list. So it's really itemizing all those things that can swirl around in your head that sometimes we're like, I'm going to remember this. And then that can add to our overwhelm and irritability. So that's been a really useful tool for me, the bullet journaling. So if you're not familiar, check it out. But it's a great way to get things out of your head. And Tony, you mentioned some really great ones. You know, the gratitude journaling is good too, talking and getting that support. And just as a side note, so I know for myself, if I don't sleep well, if I have too much alcohol, that's going to make me more irritable. If your liver in Chinese medicine is overtaxed with alcohol or junk food, you know, liver is related to anger, you're going to have more PMS symptoms. So that's also something to think about. So just think about those other tips we talked about too.
Oh, that is so huge for me too. You know, if I'm not getting a good quality sleep and enough sleep, yeah, I'm definitely going to be more irritated and just feel like I can't take on the day as well as I normally would. So that's an important piece to look at too. You know, we definitely talked about hormone balance and liver support, you know, around sleep and night sweats, but definitely that can really play into our mood changes and irritability. Like you said, Lisa, you know, when you're kind of journaling and paying attention to when you are feeling those mood changes, especially if they're happening, you know, in that PMS time, you know, a week or so before your period comes, then really looking at doing some hormone balance support and liver support can really be key.
Mm-hmm. It could be a game changer for a lot of people. And, you know, it's really tapping into those emotions, like the PMS emotions. Yeah, sometimes they can be heightened, but sometimes they can be, you know, a natural response to something that's maybe been bothering you, but you're more sensitive to it during that time. So it's addressing, okay, do I need to have a conversation with my partner? Are we pulling, you know, or am I pulling my weight? Is my partner pulling their weight? Is there something that we need to discuss? So really listening to that as well. And then I know for me, you know, if I don't get outside, I do my exercise, do something for myself every day, I'm going to be irritated and annoyed when I have to do something for everybody else. So I know for you busy moms, it might be, you know, 5 minutes of enjoying a nice cup of tea, maybe calling a friend for 5 minutes, you know, make it a twofer, go for a short walk around the block and call a friend and say to your partner, I'm out of here. You take care of the dishes. I'll be back in, you know, 10, 15, whatever. But that's really key as well.
Absolutely. I think it's really important for us to really like look at those emotions, and especially if we're experiencing, you know, mood shifts and that kind of thing, not just automatically dismissing it as being irrational. But again, there can really be stuff behind that. So really, again, looking at what's behind it and even taking a small action, like getting out of the house and taking some time for yourself can be important too. Naturopathically, I always think about the adaptogenic herbs. Those adaptogens can be really fantastic for reducing the physical and emotional impact of stress on you. And so, you know, and they can be, you know, found in teas and in a number of different forms. So, you know, some of the things that I think about that way are ashwagandha, rhodiola, Siberian ginseng or Eleutherococcus, holy basil, schisandra. One of my favorites right now is shatavari, which again is in a supplement form. I've just been using it as a powder and kind of adding it to my tea in the morning as well. So those can always be really supportive. So that, again, it reduces some of that overwhelm so that you can, you know, recover and have a little bit more resilience as well.
Mm-hmm. I love those. And yeah, adaptogenic, as you touched on, Tony. So that helps your body adapt to stress. So yeah, it can make you, as you said, more resilient. You're not as affected by stress. It strengthens your system and it can calm your system too. So yeah, I'm a holy basil junkie, tea form, tincture form. People call it liquid yoga. And I'm not talking about, you know, vinyasa here. I'm talking about yin yoga. But as you drink it and you can just take a nice sigh of relief, you can get it with lavender. You can drink it before bed or in the day if you're stressed. So these herbs, you know, sometimes people need to take them for several months, half a year, but, you know, talk to your healthcare practitioner because there's different properties to these different adaptogenic herbs and they can help you in different ways. And sometimes a combination of a few is a good idea too, but so powerful. So great support there. Do you think we answered that question with the mood changes?
I think we really covered the bases on that one. Mm-hmm. I know another question that we've gotten a lot is around headaches and especially migraines and what to do about them. Now, we did do a whole episode on headaches and migraines, so I mean we can definitely link to that in our show notes. But I think it's just important even to go through some of the basics to think about when you're getting headaches and migraines. One of the top things that I always consider for everyone is I know you just said, Dr. Lisa, that you're a whole holy basil junkie. I'm a total magnesium junkie. And especially, you know, there really is a lot of evidence that a lot of us could use more magnesium. Magnesium is one of those nutrients that's easily depleted by stress. And when you're in stress mode, your body just uses up magnesium. And magnesium is one of those essential nutrients that we need for hundreds of different pathways in our body. And it is a natural muscle relaxant, and it's a natural nervous system relaxant. So that's always something to consider, really upping your magnesium intake. There's, you know, certain foods that are higher in magnesium, leafy green veggies, nuts and seeds. But I find, especially if you're at the point where you're getting a lot of muscle tension, headaches, migraines, oftentimes magnesium in food isn't going to cut it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such an important addition, even just for hormone balance in general, for stress. And you can take, you know, it orally. Some forms are more laxative than others, like an oxide, but talk to your practitioner about the best form for you. But you can even do topical. So there's different magnesium gels and sprays. I know you've talked about that too, Tony, where if you have tight muscles and that's contributing to your headache or migraine, spray it, rub it on your neck, have an Epsom salt bath so you get that magnesium sulfate. There's so many ways you can get it into your system. And also, you know, well, with migraines and headaches, sometimes you feel like, you know, you need the caffeine, it could help you. But if you have too much, you can deplete some of that magnesium too, and then it could counteract any of the benefits. So
absolutely. And another piece, you know, especially even talking about the impact of coffee and caffeine on your body, is really looking at figuring out any other triggers that could be happening for those headaches and migraines. So I find that it's really so important to do a really systematic assessment of any food sensitivities or intolerances you may be experiencing, and to at least do a period of avoiding, or ideally more complete elimination of those food sensitivities, so you can really get to a baseline and, you know, do a slow reintroduction of foods to really see, you know, again, how your body responds to that food and what, you know, is really triggering some of those headaches. I find when, you know, I've done this process with so many different patients that a lot of, you know, women who come to see me with chronic migraines really find that, you know, the number of headaches they have really drastically reduces, or, you know, they're able to, you know, completely avoid having those headaches and migraines when they're able to avoid those foods.
Mm-hmm. It can be a game changer. So you can do an elimination, a food sensitivity test. Those foods, if you're reacting to them, it definitely is adding to inflammation in the brain, which adds to the pain. And you can also have a reaction like a histamine reaction, or intolerance, we could call it, where your body's making a lot of histamine in response to things, or you're ingesting foods high in histamine like aged cheeses, deli meats. There's a whole host of other foods, but that can be a trigger for a lot of people too. So keeping a journal, doing some testing exploration can make a huge difference. And yeah, I see so many people with gluten, dairy sensitivity as well, where that can be triggering headaches or migraines. And then, you know, obviously hormonal imbalances can too, which we've talked about a little bit as well with the PMS symptoms.
For sure. And I mean, definitely for myself, you know, I grew up having migraines, and really looking at the foods that work for me and don't work for me was really key for really managing my headaches and migraines. I also find that, you know, specific body work can make such a difference for each person. Now, again, massage can be fantastic. Acupuncture can be fantastic for, again, really addressing muscle tension and tight muscles and trigger points. I also find it's specifically for me and for a lot of my patients, chiropractic can be really fantastic, you know, to make sure that there's proper alignment of the spine and reducing any compression on the nerves. That can make such a difference. And I know I've found in the past, and even not, you know, in the not so distant past, had, you know, more migraines that popped up, and, you know, making sure that I was sticking with some chiropractic care to make sure that I was really properly supporting the structure and alignment of my spine and my neck, particularly, had been really key to manage migraines.
Great tip. Yeah, osteopathic is great. And just being aware of your body position in the day, right? How are you sitting at your desk? A lot of us don't have the great setup right now at home that maybe you had at your office or workplace. So really evaluating how you're sleeping, how you're sitting, that can all add up. And then just two quick and easies is staying hydrated. That could be a huge one for people, and or just not having, you know, too much sugars and carbs, because if your blood sugar then dips later on, that can add to, you know, a headache or a migraine if you're not getting a nice, you know, several balanced meals in a day.
Oh yeah, not getting enough fluids, not getting enough waters can be really a no-brainer when it comes to avoiding headaches and migraines too. So I think that's a really important point, Lisa.
I like the no-brainer when we're talking about migraines and headaches.
I didn't even mean to be punny.
Nice one.
So again, that kind of covers, you know, the question we get around headaches and migraines. Another question that we get fairly often, especially for those of us who are in perimenopause and have had kids, is, you know, what can you do about heavy periods? And so this is one that I get commonly from women who come to see me. One of the very first things that I look at is your levels of iron in your blood, because it doesn't really seem like, you know, a direct common sense thing to think about. But what has really been discovered is that when you have lower amounts of iron, that can impact how your body's ability to clot, and that can lead to heavier bleeding and heavier periods. So then you almost get caught in a vicious cycle of, you know, having a heavier period, losing more iron during that period, and that contributes to low iron and getting stuck in that cycle. So that can be really important to look at.
Mm-hmm. That can make a huge difference. So really get your iron stores tested, your ferritin, and then you want to be optimal, not just acceptable. So see your naturopathic doctor to discuss if it's the right level. And also when you're getting blood work, good to check your thyroid too. If your thyroid is underfunctioning or you have hypothyroidism, it can be associated with heavy periods as well. So you really want to explore that, correct any imbalances, whether you need, you know, supplements, herbs, desiccated thyroid, or even a medication, but that can make a huge difference too. And then another hormonal piece is you can have estrogen dominance. So, you know, if your progesterone's getting lower, the estrogen's relatively higher in perimenopause, you could actually have a thicker uterine lining. You might, you know, start to develop fibroids, or they were there, but symptoms are getting worse, potentially endometriosis. So those are some things to explore as well through some ultrasounds, like a transvaginal ultrasound, just to rule out any other reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, once you've kind of explored your iron and the hormone piece of things, there are some lovely astringent herbs that can be really helpful for reducing some of those heavy periods. I mean, the one that is really kind of the top of my list is a herb called yarrow. Available in tea and other forms as well. There's a number of other herbs that that you can look at as well. So especially under the guidance of a naturopathic doctor or a clinical herbalist too.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, get a workup. Maybe you need some estrogen liver detox support to bring those levels down. You can use some astringent herbs. And I think that's, you know, that gives you some good options when you have those heavier periods. So you don't have to, you know, resort to the birth control pill. You can explore some of these other routes, because that can be commonly prescribed in perimenopause for irregularity and heavy periods, which, you know, may in the long term cause more problems. And we did a whole episode on the birth control pill, so we'll link to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really nice, especially, you know, I've heard from a number of women who know that, you know, a hormonal birth control just doesn't work for them. And then they have a heavy period, and then it's a matter of like, okay, what can I do? Because, you know, their doctors don't necessarily have a solution that's, you know, non-surgical to deal with those heavy periods. So it's really nice to try out some of these more gentle approaches first, so that you don't have to resort to any kind of surgery.
Mm-hmm. And if you are taking the pill, just pay attention, because that could be a big trigger for mood changes too, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe more tendency for depression, but there can be anxiety too. So pay attention to that from a previous question.
Yeah, absolutely. I've also, especially recently, gotten a lot more questions around heartburn showing up. A number of my patients have come to me with, heartburn where they've never had heartburn before, bloating when they've never had bloating before. There's a number of things to kind of think about when, if you are experiencing that, newly, or if it's just something that has been, popping up for you, over time. The first few things that I think about, again, is just kind of paying attention to when you're getting that heartburn or bloating. Is there a trigger like a food sensitivity or intolerance? Is it when you're eating certain foods, whether it's more acidic foods, things like tomatoes, if you're having a more coffee, even some people who are eating more bread or gluten can have more of that trigger happening. And then also even timing during the day. Are you actually eating too late at night or overeating? That can kind of stimulate more of that heartburn, acid reflux, or bloating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing more and more people with this too. And I think as we approach the holidays, with more alcohol, although it's going to be maybe Zoom holiday parties, more baking, mm-hmm. people are mm-hmm. watching Netflix and eating and drinking right up until bedtime. They're getting a lot of these symptoms. So really try to give yourself a window of time, ideally 2 hours you're not eating or drinking, maybe just a bit of tea or water in that 2 hour period before bed. That can make a huge difference as well. And then with stress, when we're in our sympathetic nervous system, so that's our fight or flight response, digestion shuts down. So your body is not releasing the digestive juices it needs for you to break down your food. Things don't move through your gut properly, so then it can come back up. So you get that reflux, that burning. So if you're eating, even just watching a stressful show, or if you're eating while you're on your computer and working during your lunch hour, this is not going to help you either. So really try to get into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest, when our body, we're salivating, we're ready for food, we're releasing our enzymes and our stomach acid. So taking a few deep breaths before you eat, eating mindfully and turning off the screens, really tasting your food, chewing it, just being aware of the whole process can make a huge difference.
For sure. Because again, when you're in that kind of fight or flight or stress mode, and your digestion is shut down, then you're really not producing an ideal amount of stomach acid. And while a lot of people think about, acid reflux and heartburn as having too much acid in their stomach, what can often happen is there's not enough acid in your stomach. So you actually have something called hypochlorhydria.
Nice one, Tony.
a word I love to use, because that describes just having a lower than ideal amount of stomach acid production. That will then in turn not give the signal to the sphincter between your esophagus and your stomach to close up and prevent acid from coming up. And when that esophageal sphincter is more lax and kind of slacking off, then even a small amount of acid going up will not feel great. So oftentimes, I've found that, patients that instead of necessarily taking, medication that's going to lower your stomach acid, again, whether it's like Tums or whether it's a proton pump inhibitor or any kind of, antacid medication, prescription or over the counter, something to really look at is doing a bit of a trial to see how your body responds to stimulating more of that stomach acid. It could be a supplement like a betaine HCL in a pill form, or it even could be bitter herbs in a pill form or a liquid form, or even as something as simple as a little bit of apple cider vinegar. Some of my favorite bitter herbs are to think about are things like gentian and dandelion, ginger. They really do, again, send that signal and to your digestive system to get going and really kind of reconnect the brain, the nervous system, and the digestive system to be working together.
Mm-hmm. So important, because we've really moved away our diet from bitter tasting things, right? And bitter really does support digestion beautifully. So even adding arugula, radicchio to your salads, you think in some cultures they have like digestive aperitifs where it's really bitter. So it's something we really want to bring back into our palate and into our taste buds. And it gives you so much benefit. And I see, as you said, yeah, Dr. Tony, so many people with low stomach acid. So yes, you may get symptom relief from the proton pump inhibitor, because it's basically, you know, neutralizing or stopping any like a little bit more of the acid production, but you're going to pay for it because you're not able to digest your food. You can get a bacterial overgrowth. You can have nutrient deficiencies. So don't stop it right away. Talk to your healthcare practitioner to see if there's other options for you to support digestion naturally. So those were some great recommendations. And then one thing to think about too, people don't realize peppermint tea. So yes, peppermint and peppermint tea is great for your lower abdomen, like cramping and diarrhea, but it can relax that esophageal sphincter. I love we're saying sphincter. Yes, you have one near your stomach, between your esophagus and your stomach. That can relax that sphincter. So that can cause reflux in people too. So some people come to me and they're like, I have reflux, you know, I'm drinking peppermint tea, I'm doing all the things. Why is it still bad? So then I would recommend they cut out peppermint tea, and that can make a difference too.
For sure. And, you know, and it's so important to have options that way. Cause I mean, I've even had patients come to see me who have been taking, you know, antacid medication, even prescribed by their doctors, and it hasn't necessarily helped. So, you know, it just to know that, again, there's other options out there, and it can be super simple, like, you know, stopping peppermint tea can make such a difference for people.
Having too. Apple cider vinegar. Yeah. Those are two huge ones that are so easy to do, but can make a huge impact. So I think we answered that question, right, Tony? Yeah. We're just rolling through. And I think our last question. So we get some questions about kids' sleep. So depending on the age of your kids, you know, they can go through sleep regressions, you know, during a stressful time like a pandemic. Sleep has become more of a challenge, I think, for everybody in the family, especially if the kids' routine has been disrupted or they're on screens a lot in the day. So we're going to, you know, answer that question. How can we support kids sleep? And you can listen back to our sleep episode. But if I'm, you know, thinking about my experience with my toddler Stuart, so over the pandemic, you know, his sugar was increasing a bit. He was getting some, you know, made good bars after dinner, maybe the occasional little goodie. He's pretty good for not having too much sugar, but he started to get really like restless at night and not settle down. And we'd also, you know, let him watch a little bit of TV, maybe some shows that were stimulating that had dinosaurs in them. We'd sing some kind of like, you know, active songs and dance around. And then when it came time to story time, we'd expect him to kind of just shut down and settle down. So we really had to revamp the bedtime routine. And we said, okay, we're just going to have, you know, fruit, unsweetened yogurt. We call it chocolate yogurt, where we add in carob powder. So it's not actually chocolate. So he gets what he thinks is chocolate before bed, but it's not. He gets that. We turn the screens off. We have like a relaxing meditation, or we try to. So, you know, some nights it works, some nights it's a fail, but at least he's listening to either relaxing music or a guided kid meditation. And then we're reading kind of more quiet books, not too stimulating, and singing more quiet songs. So that's made a huge difference for his sleep and falling asleep a lot easier.
Yeah. And again, I've definitely looked at those kind of things for Frankie in particular too. What actually is happening after dinner, you know, really avoiding a lot of screen time too late, avoiding sugar, but making sure that she is getting a snack before bed and isn't, you know, going to bed hungry, because that can really impact kids too. And really looking at her bedtime routine. You know, she often will have a bath, even if, you know, I'm not washing her hair or washing her specifically, but that can really kind of, again, getting into a routine so she knows what to expect and to wind down at the end of the day. Again, doing some reading, doing some cuddle time too, can be really great to help your kids relax as well, especially again, you know, with all of these changes and kind of uncertainty around pandemic, that doing a little extra cuddle time, I think is really key. And then I've definitely, for Frankie, definitely thought about, you know, more supplements and nutrients that can really help to calm down her nervous system. Because yeah, she can tend to get a little bit more restless at night. So some of the things, you know, to think about, and some of even the things that I've used with Frankie are things like magnesium, the amino acid L-theanine, a nutrient called inositol. And even there's different homeopathics that can work really well for different kids, Bach flower remedies, you know, that are very dilute amounts of different flowers, homeopathics that are very dilute amounts of different plants and minerals can be really supportive. So again, that's where, you know, really using an individual approach with each kid is important too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great recommendations. We typically give Stuart a little bit of liquid magnesium, not too much, or, you know, mm-hmm. the kiddos can get loose stools. You know, we have been known to give him chamomile or lemon balm tea. So steep it in boiling water, let it cool to room temperature. And he actually sips on it at night. We haven't done it for a little while because he's been better with sleep, but he actually likes those flavors. And if you're like, oh, my kid's not going to drink tea, I totally get it. You can add those tea bags to their bath and then let it steep in there. You could put several tea bags of one of those chamomile or lemon balm, and then they'll get that smell, you know, a little bit of absorption from the skin. So that can help calm their system as well.
And that's fantastic. And even considering, again, if your kid isn't going to drink tea, you can always even add that tea with, you know, blending it up with some fruit and freezing it in an ice pop. Mm-hmm. Again, you may not be thinking about ice pops going into winter, but sometimes, again, kids will still love, you know, that kind of little treat where it's, you know, healthy for them, not any added sugars. But again, you can kind of sneak in some of those herbs in the form of tea in those ice pops too.
For sure. Yeah, that's a great tip. So kids love anything in frozen popsicle form, and you can make it taste better with the fruit too.
Yeah, absolutely. So so that's our first Ask Me Anything episode. If again, we can definitely repeat this kind of episode in the future. So if you have any questions for us specifically, you know, you can connect with us on Instagram, on Facebook, and let us know, you know, what specifics that you're wanting to hear about as well on a future episode.
Yeah, so go to @perimenopausalmamas, M-A-M-A-S, which you know because you're obviously listening to this. But yeah, we're easy to find on social media. So should we switch now, Dr. Tony, to our super mom moment? So
yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess I'm up this week. Or yeah, who's up this week again?
Oh, Noah, we can both share our super mom moments for this week. I know for me, sometimes, especially in Calgary, getting into winter, it can be a challenge to get outside. You know, especially when the wind is blowing here in Calgary, there can be a pretty bitter wind chill happening. You know, I've definitely had a few super mom moments this past week where it hasn't necessarily been the nicest outside, but you know, we still bundled up. I bundled up. Frankie bundled up. We went for a walk. We went outside to play at the park. And especially even this weekend, you know, the wind was pretty bitter, but we still got out there and had lots of fun. And again, got that really important outside time in the fresh air.
I love that. No excuses, right? And as we know, you know, if we don't get our kids out or ourselves out, we go stir crazy, it affects our mood, but our kids won't sleep as well. So we forgot to mention that. So
oh,
I'm sure
absolutely.
Frankie was sleeping well after being outside in the cold and burning off some energy.
Yeah, she sure was. So how about you, Lisa? You have a super mom moment too?
Well, I'll save that for the next time, but I'll talk about my mess up today because it's timely for, you know, we're recording this and tomorrow's December 1st. And we got an advent calendar for Stuart. I was going to be ambitious and make one, but that didn't happen. So it's like maybe another time. But I saw they had a Crayola one. So, you know, Stuart's really loving arts and crafts. And yes, I know it's a lot of plastic and waste, but figured it's better than those, you know, kind of synthetic chocolates or candy that I used to get as a kid, which I loved. But I think he's excited about it because it arrived via delivery yesterday. So we opened it up. And by accident, I actually opened up the whole calendar and pulled out everything that he would actually get. So he saw that. And now it's like ripped that way. So he keeps on wanting to open the whole thing and pick and choose something. And then today he really wanted his first, you know, day one Crayola surprise. And it's November 30th right now. And he wasn't having, you know, no for an answer. So I let him have one of the markers. But, you know, I think I did good with not getting him, you know, the chocolate, trying to get him something a little more creative. But it backfired in that I opened it and he started it a day early.
Oh, hey, I think it's amazing that you got an advent calendar for him, because I definitely haven't gotten around to that for Frankie. And the fact that you were able to find a really fun one that didn't include, again, extra sugar or chocolate or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to add one thing, though. The first marker was a scented one, and I looked away and then I looked back and he had marker on his lip. And I said, did you taste it? And he said, no. But then he started to wipe his tongue. So I was like, oh, no, I poisoned my kid. And why do they make them scented, really? So I was like, no, there's chemicals. There's chemicals. So he's trying to rapidly like wipe his tongue. So I hope there's no more scented markers in there.
I'm sure it's a non-scented marker or a non-toxic scented marker.
Yeah, it was only a little bit, but I'm like, well, I might as well just got him the chocolate. At least it's technically edible.
Oh man, those kids. I mean, when we look away, the things that they can do, right?
I thought he had a cut on his lip because it was a red marker. I was like, oh no. He's like, no, it's marker.
Oh, hey, it happens, right, Lisa?
Yeah, and it's his first advent calendar. So I think, yeah, Frankie's a little younger still. She might not, you know, notice or need it yet. So
I think I'll totally get away without it this year, yeah. But probably next year I'll need to have an advent calendar. So I'll note in the back of my head to look for a Crayola one.
Yeah, I'll let you know how the rest of the days go.
Perfect.
Okay.
Awesome. So let's share some of our mama must-haves for this week, especially because we were talking about digestion earlier. I wanted to share some of my favorite digestive supports. Again, we kind of talked about bitter herbs. I really love the bitter herb blend by a company called St. Francis Herbs. It's a liquid a blend called Canadian Bitters. It's pretty bitter, but it has, again, some ginger and a little bit of peppermint in it too. So it really does taste lovely to me. So it's one of my favorites to, again, make sure that my digestive system's ready to digest food. And if there's some tummy aches and some upset afterwards, I'm a really big fan of using an essential oil blend, actually. You can put it on topically on the belly for yourself and your kids. You know, things that I look for, a blend that has ginger, peppermint, and fennel in it. So that can be really helpful if, again, you know, over the holiday season, you're overindulging or eating too much.
Mm-hmm. Great suggestions there. Bitters. I love anything bitter. I love that taste, but some people with the Canadian bitters, they shudder, but they know they feel better when they take it. So it's definitely a distinct formula, but works really well. And I guess for mine, I'll pick, my liquid yoga. I'm really loving Tulsi tea with lavender right now. So I just steep it for 10 minutes or more in boiled water. I breathe it in. I savor it. So I've been having to work late online longer, like later than I wanted to for, it was almost like a week in a row with different webinars and events. So I would, you know, put on my blue blocker glasses if I wasn't needing to be seen, dim my screens, but I'd sip on a cup of lavender and Tulsi tea. So I found that helped me to settle down and still get a decent sleep, even if I was up late working. So I recommend that.
Perfect. That's awesome. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today. We'd love for you to connect with us and check out our show notes on our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. We'd love for you to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review and a 5-star rating so other perimenopausal mamas can find us online. Tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Take care. Have a great week.
Bye.